This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, Saturday mornings can only mean one thing. That's right, it is time for the Big E Sports Show, Thanksgiving style and Thanksgiving edition. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell. Always love to connect with our audience. You can join us live on Twitter at eRadioSports. Info at eRadioSports.com. And you will want to check out PodcastArena.com. We have scored some big time guests this week, and you will want to go back and listen to each and every one of our interviews. Olympic swimmer Whitney Metzler will be joining us. She's going to kick off our program here in hour one. We're going to take time for some NBA news and notes that continue to recap the 2020 draft. Mitch Lawrence from Sirius XM NBA Radio will be joining us. And it is week 12 of the NFL season. Can you believe it? Bob Glauber will be with us, and Andy McNamara. We're going to take time for some fantasy football talk. Right now, let's visit with my producer, and that is Jack McCraw. Join him on Twitter at JackMC15. We've got a lot to talk about, but the first order of business is the Steelers and the Ravens. This game was moved from Thursday to Sunday due to COVID-19. And so in my mind, this is what I'm thinking about, Jack. I mean, should Big Ben win the MVP if he does carry the Steelers to a perfect 16-0 season?
MVP, no. I think he could have been in play for the Comeback Player of the Year award had it not been for Alex Smith returning not only to the Washington football team's roster, but now taking the job as their starting quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger has been good, not great. I think the Steelers have been really heavily reliant on their defense, and Big Ben has so many weapons around him, like Juju Smith-Schuster, Claypool, James Conner. It just seems that the Steelers are a perfect team, and that it's not just one star-driven player on that team.
What were your expectations leading up to the 2020 season with the Steelers? Were they one of your top four teams coming in?
No, I can't say that they were. I thought the Ravens were going to be there. The Chiefs were going to be there. I had a gut feeling that somehow Bill Belichick was going to come pull something out of thin air and make playoffs again. Mm-hmm. But I'm a little surprised that the Steelers are this good, and who knows, they could have a perfect season.
So who do you give credit to? I mean, why are they striding out this year? I mean, is it the defense, or do we need to give all credit to Big Ben?
I got to say it's Mike Tomlin.
Okay.
Mike Tomlin has...
That's fair.
Mike Tomlin, in my opinion, is the second best coach in the league behind Bill Belichick. He knows how to rally his troops better than anyone else, and he put the Steelers on top of the mountain.
What a great way to kick off our program with some NFL news and notes with my producer, Jack McCraw. Right now, we're going to take a hard shift. Coming up next here in Hour 1 will be Whitney Metzler.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back, Hour 1, to this special edition of the Big E Sports Show at Sports Map Radio Network, sportsmapradio.com. Many different ways and platforms to connect with us. You can always join us live on Twitter at eRadioSports, info at eRadioSports.com, and podcastarena.com. As always, you can trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Their professionals know what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Well, we hope all of you are enjoying your Thanksgiving activities and you are taking steps to protect yourself and others from getting or spreading COVID-19. It is all about safety first. And we are so excited to introduce our next guest. Here we are in Hour 1. We're going to kick off our first interview with reliving some amazing memories with an Olympic swimmer, an incredible golf mom that I met earlier this month. Whitney Metzler represented the United States in the 96 Olympics in Atlanta, Georgia, where she competed in the women's 400-meter individual medley, and she advanced to the final event and finished eighth overall. She attended the University of Florida, where she was an All-American, and she currently works as an attorney for the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. She was inducted to the Maryland Swimming Hall of Fame in 2001. She's a super mom, has three sons and two daughters, and truly an inspiration. Good morning, Whitney. It's great to have you on with us, and I hope you celebrated a wonderful Thanksgiving during this unprecedented year and during this pandemic.
Yeah, it was a quiet one, a little different than usual, but we had a great time.
Well, we appreciate you carving out some time because it is a busy time of year, and we love to highlight exceptional athletes on our program. And I immediately thought of you after we met and learned more about your impressive background as an Olympic swimmer. Just to kind of pull back the curtain for some of you that are tuning in, I mean, Whitney and I met in Kinder, Louisiana earlier this month. Our sons played in the Nota Begay Junior Golf National Championship. We had the opportunity to caddy for our sons. It was such an awesome event. What were some of your takeaways, Whitney?
Well, I think it's the first time I've ever caddied with another mom, so that was a lot of fun.
Oh.
Two great positive women out there on the golf course just encouraging their kids along. That was absolutely wonderful. What a well-run tournament. The kids had a great time. Everything was taken care of. I was a little surprised at the damage that Kinder had experienced with the two hurricanes, but man, did they pull off a really good event for the kids.
You know, and I have to wonder too, share a little bit about your son, Reed. I mean, he's a tremendous golfer. This was not an easy event to qualify for. During the qualifying process, I mean, my son Eli was saying Reed shot like five unders. He did exceptionally well to get to this point.
Yeah, he really did. He qualified at Turning Stone in New York, which was a really beautiful venue as well. Did not have the performance he wanted to have when he was in Kinder, but, you know, that's golf. Sometimes it all works together, and then sometimes it doesn't. His putter was really cold all weekend. It's amazing how much he worked on it, though, when we made our little stop in North Carolina on our way home.
Uh-huh.
That kid can make birdie putts from anywhere right now. So hopefully we turn the corner before his next big tournament.
Well, and you understand that as an athlete, there's always twists and turns on your journey. And so take us back. Let's segue now and let's talk about your journey in swimming and, you know, making the Olympics. When did you first get started?
Oh, well, I started swimming. Actually, I followed my sister into the pool. So I was 5 years old when I started swimming year round. I think the summer before that, so I would have been four, I started swimming in summer league because she was swimming. I just did not like sitting on the sidelines. I had a ton of energy, and my parents thought it was a really good way to burn some of that off. So they kind of threw me in the pool at five. By the time I was six, I was actually swimming in her relays, the 10 and under relays. So she would get stuck with her little sister on a lot of her relays just to fill them out.
Oh, wow. Hey, Whitney Metzler is with us. She's an Olympic swimmer, an amazing mom. And so as we relive your journey, I mean, when did you realize that you could compete at the highest level and that it was a realistic goal that you could ultimately make the Olympic team?
Well, I think it's always a goal. Even little kids, when they're swimming summer league, will think of standing on the Olympic podium. But I was actually a pretty good swimmer from a young age. So I was ranked number one in the nation, 100 breaststroke, when I was 10 years old.
Wow.
So early on, I really knew that I had a gift for swimming. And about 12 or 13, I started realizing that maybe if I worked at practice a little harder, I could actually be a really, really good swimmer. So the one who kind of helped me see the light was actually Bob Bowman. He's a Arizona State University coach now, but he is best known as Michael Phelps' age group coach.
Okay, yeah.
So he coached for North Baltimore Aquatic Club. That's the club I swam for. So he had one of those really positive but offhand comments about, hey, you know, if you worked a little harder at swimming, imagine how good you could be. And I took off. It was just the right time to say it, and it was not done in a negative way. It was really positive, and I really embraced it from that point forward.
Well, he pushed the right button. So as a young athlete, I mean, what was your training schedule like?
Crazy. I look back at it now and can't believe my mom drove to Baltimore as many times as she did. So we lived in Pennsylvania, so it was a 45-minute drive each way. I would have practiced from 5:30 in the morning to about 7, race home for school, have school until about 1:30. Luckily, my school was willing to work with me on an adjusted schedule. And then I would go back to Baltimore and have practice from 3:30 to like 5:36, and then an hour of dry land afterwards. So that's your running, lifting, you know, cardio stuff in
Wow.
addition to swimming. So yeah, lots of hours in the pool.
Absolutely. So as you reflect on your sport, I mean, how did swimming shape you as a person? I mean, just talk about the impact that it's had on who you are today. I mean, you're very successful as an attorney and what you learned from your sport, Whitney.
Well, I think the thing that most athletes take away from the sport is as much work as you put into it, you will get out of it. And you have to get past those disappointing times in life. There's no easy path forward. It takes work. There's no shortcuts. the more hours and dedication you put in, the more you're going to get out of it. So, you know, just like I said, Reed had some disappointments with at Kinder this weekend. Mm-hmm. Well, the year before I made, or 2 years before I made the Olympic team, I had a very bad car accident leading into Worlds, and actually failed to make the world team. So, you know, just bad timing, and those little intervening events. It's amazing how much that can play a role in athletics. And so it's really helped me try to help guide the kids as they've, you know, found what they want to do and the sport that they want to pursue, and help guide them around any obstacles that they come up, that come up in their sport.
You had a shoulder injury while you were at the University of Florida. And so that had to be a big challenge for you to overcome in swimming.
So I actually had to retire after 2 years at University of Florida. So I went from being an athlete and full-time student to working full-time to be able to pay for college, because I was away from home and I wanted to graduate from the University of Florida. So I did. I had impingement syndrome. So my shoulder was unstable, and I ended up with a torn rotator cuff and a partially torn bicep tendon. So finally had that operated on in 1999, actually 4 days before I graduated from the University of Florida. So, you know, it was not the ending to the swimming career I wanted, but, you know, it definitely made it a very easy decision of whether I was going to continue to swim or not. I just physically couldn't do it anymore.
Our very special guest at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, is Olympian Whitney Metzler. We're talking about her incredible swimming career, and now we've got to talk about the proudest moment as an athlete. I mean, what was it like, Whitney, to compete in the Olympic Games? And take us back when you qualified. I mean, what were you feeling, and what was that experience like? I mean, what a tremendous accomplishment. All of us as athletes, I mean, you want to go to the Olympics.
Absolutely. So I qualified in Indianapolis, and I was on the first day of Olympic trials. So for swimming, it's the people who've placed first or second in any event. It's the only time in your life where second is just as good as first. And so I placed second in the 400 individual medley in the afternoon event. That morning, I remember swimming and just having a terrible breaststroke leg. So for individual medley, for those non-swimmers, you do four different strokes and 100 yards at each stroke. And breaststroke was always my best. Mm-hmm. That was what I was good at when I was a kid, and it was always my strongest leg, but it just didn't feel right. And I think every athlete has that. When you know, we met with golfing. Sometimes golfing, the putter doesn't feel right, or your swing just doesn't feel right. There's something that doesn't feel right. And that was my breaststroke. And so I actually, it was the only time I ever changed up my normal routine. I went back to the pool in the middle of the afternoon instead of just taking a nap. And we fixed it. My coach and I worked on it where it felt normal again. So I swam my best time ever at Olympic trials to make the Olympic team. I doubled down on that in the Olympics and dropped a whole another 2 seconds when I swam in Atlanta, which is almost unheard of. People don't usually do their best times in their first Olympics. Normally the nerves get to them. So that was a really interesting turn of events for me. And, you know, I was so excited to finally put some of those past disappointments behind me. That's the video. When you see me at the end of the race, I get out of the pool and my coach hugs me and even makes that comment. He's like, "Does this make up for last summer?" And it absolutely did. It's, you know, a lot of time and dedication goes into it. And my entire high school career, you know, I was swimming. So that was my focus.
Our very special guest, we are flat out of time. I should have scheduled several more segments. There's so much more that I want to get into. Olympian Whitney Metzler has been with us at Sports Map Radio Network. And as we close out the interview this morning, I mean, you have shared tremendous insight on, you know, what it takes, the dedication, the training to be an Olympic athlete. But would you mind just speaking to the sports parents out there, and perhaps what's some advice that you could provide for him?
Well, I think at the end of the day, you have to support whatever their dreams are. My kids are not swimmers. I, you know, had to learn the sport of golf. I had to learn what it took for them. And luckily I can, you know, just stand back and be the mom. I always tell my kids before we start out that no matter what, I'm going to be proud of how they do. And you know, the score on that they can record in golf is just a number. It doesn't make them a better person or a worse person. So at the end of the day, you know, as long as I'm raising good people, I'm thrilled to death that they have some athletic ability and are using it for good purposes, and, you know, not sitting around the house watching TV or playing video games only. So I'm really thrilled that they're constantly out doing stuff. And I could not be more proud of all my kids.
Absolutely. That's some great advice for all the parents and also for the young athletes out there. You are truly, Whitney, a woman of inspiration. We wanted to have you on the program, and I promise we're going to have you back. We got to continue this conversation. So much more to get into, and have a wonderful holiday season. We look forward to talking in 2021. Thank you so much, Whitney, and congratulations.
Thank you.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back on this Saturday morning, Sports Map Radio Network, sportsmapradio.com. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, and if you are just joining us, you've tuned into the Big E Sports Show. Many different ways to connect. Always live on Twitter at eRadioSports, info at eRadioSports.com, podcastarena.com. And perhaps your wiper blades are chattering, skipping, or squeaking. Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see their selection. The professional parts people will help you find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will install your wiper blades free of charge. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. It is time to talk some fantasy football 2020, and we are so delighted to have back with us. He is the national fantasy host with Sportsnet, and that is our good friend Andy McNamara. Andy, it's good to have you on our Thanksgiving edition of the Big E Sports Show. It doesn't get better than that. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Alyssa. Great to be on with you, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Hope everybody's having a nice, safe weekend and lots of fun, lots of football.
Absolutely. Okay, so here we are in the final week of November, and there's been just so many exciting matchups this week. We're looking forward to a lot of the games on Sunday. 11 weeks are completed. What should we expect in week 12 and going into Sunday's games?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. It's so important, whether you're betting on games or fantasy football, to pay as close attention as you can to the insider Twitter accounts, to all the team reporters and all that, because as much as like injuries just randomly pop up, COVID has become a part of that, mm-hmm. right? And you can't, it's not like you can gauge like, okay, well, Julio Jones is typically has a banged up ankle or toe or something, so I need to watch that. COVID-19 can strike anywhere, and it's just become a part of this year. So when you're setting lineups, when you're laying bets or whatever, you want to make sure you are paying such close attention to every game, every situation, because stuff can pop up day of, right? Like, and that's what you really have to look towards. And now is the time of year we're seeing, all right, you know, playoff pushes, mm-hmm. wild card chases. You have this year, remember, we have the extra wild card spot in each conference.
National fantasy sports host with Sportsnet, Andy McNamara, is with us at Sports Map Radio Network. Give him a follow on Twitter. He's always providing all those updates that he's talking about at AndyMC81. Okay, so what are the top priorities here in week 12 and the players that we should be looking at and perhaps adding?
Well, I think what we got to do is look at the New York Giants, which I know sounds sort of strange to say.
Okay.
You look at them, it's like 3-7. You know, the NFC stinks. I know, but you got to follow the matchups, right? This is key, especially when we're looking at waiver wire pickups, sleeper plays, cheap plays on DraftKings, that type of thing. You want to follow the matchups. You want to follow the teams that are playing the Bengals, the Jets, the Jaguars, the Cowboys a little bit now with Andy Dalton back. I like the situation there a little bit better. But the Giants here, I think if you're looking for a streaming defense, if you go like me, I draft the defense, but I swap them in and out every week depending if I can. The Giants, I think, are in an absolute smash spot here for your fantasy team because they're a mid-level DraftKings salary. And they're widely available on waiver wire. So that number is going to be rising up from the beginning of the week. So you want to see if you can grab it beforehand. Because, Alyssa, you got no poor Joe Burrow. Oh, ACL, MCL, struck.
Yeah.
Just sucks, right?
Yeah.
So good. But the thing with Bengals are, they're not even going with their backup, Ryan Finley, who was terrible last year. Less than 48% completion percentage. They're dragging up Brandon Allen off the practice squad, who had a cup of coffee with the Broncos last year. So if you're the Giants, a team that has had at least two sacks in each game this year, several more than that, and three plus in several as well, and you look at them, you got 8 total interceptions, 7 fumble recoveries, this is going to be a very predictable offense. And I think you can feast on that. So I like the Giants there. I also like Daniel Jones because of the legs, because of his rushing abilities. The Bengals have a Swiss cheese defense. So I think you might be able to do a little stack of Daniel Jones and the New York Giants.
Okay, so the Giants are on the road. They will face the Bengals. 12 o'clock kickoff on Fox on Sunday. How do you think ultimately this game is going to play out? I mean, it sounds like you're kind of favoring the Giants.
Yeah, I am. And they're six-point favorites. Now, the Giants' defense is right in that. Now, typically, I've sung their praises, but they're right in the middle. So if it was against Joe Burrow, I think this would almost be a pick 'em. But you got Brandon Allen. Now, they got a lot of weapons in Cincinnati. You got to love that offense. But the offensive line is terrible. I kind of like that line. I like the six. I wouldn't be surprised if we see the Giants win by a touchdown.
Fantasy Football 2020, our Thanksgiving edition with our very special guest, National Fantasy Sports Host with Sportsnet. He's a big-time Browns fan, and that's what we're going to transition to. Andy McNamara is with us. We love him. Okay, so give us some bold predictions between the Browns here in Week 12 against Jacksonville.
Oh, boy. Well, you know what? This is a game where I talked off the top about the unpredictability of the COVID situation.
Oh, sure, yeah.
This game is it's all over.
Okay.
You have, for the Jacksonville Jaguars, you have not just the players, defensive coordinator cannot be in the building. The defensive coaches are not allowed in the building until game day. You have Josh Allen off the edge, their top defensive end. He's not playing. You have even their kicker is off. They're bringing up a guy who's just getting off of a four-game suspension as a new kicker. You have that all spread out. And for the Browns, Myles Garrett's on the COVID list. He's just a dominant force. They're missing him. Denzel Ward, their top cornerback, has a calf strain. And so we're looking at the situation. Oh, by the way, for Jacksonville Jaguars, still no Minshew. They're dusting off old Mike Glennon. Yikes. Mm-hmm. Mike Glennon has like three passes in like 3 years. It's boy. They tried Jake Luton out. Okay, that was kind of fun the first week. Then he just got decimated by the Steelers last week. They're going with Mike Glennon. The Jaguars are in free fall. They're 1-9. Do they really, as a team, as a franchise, going to push to win? Not really. They're going to be looking and trying things out for next year and trying to get a top pick, probably for a quarterback, depending how the season plays out, either a Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields out of Ohio State. So for the Jaguars, despite the Browns missing their top guys, they still should win. And you can always fall into that Florida trap, right? Take a team for granted. James Robinson, really good fantasy player for the Jaguars. I think you still play him on your fantasy team. But this could be, I think, the week where Baker Mayfield has the handcuffs unshackled and he's able to throw the ball a little bit. Because the last three games, here's another thing, Alyssa. Well, this time of year, we got to look at the weather situation. So if you look at the Brown stats and really their opponents as well in a bigger picture, the last three games, they've all been in Cleveland. Every game has had torrential downpours, whipping winds off of Lake Erie. You couldn't throw the ball. So it was heavy run, low passing. So don't let that necessarily influence you when it comes to making decisions on the sleepers or flex plays or whatever for your fantasy team. Make sure you're looking at the whole situation. So I think it could be a nice little day for Rashard Higgins, Baker Mayfield, Austin Hooper, and definitely the running backs, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. And I get this question a lot. Especially when Nick Chubb came back, like, Andy, do I play Kareem Hunt? Do I trade him? I say, yes, Kareem Hunt is better. He has better fantasy numbers with Nick Chubb in the lineup. You can play both. You can play both Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and I really like that strategy again in this matchup here. And then you spread it out. Like, you got, I think Nick Chubb's around $7,000 on DraftKings. Kareem Hunt's around the $6,000 mark, so you got a little bit of price flexibility. You can stack those guys.
Okay, so Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, is that, in your mind, the best running back tandem in the National Football League?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think there is any doubt. And the discipline and patience that rookie head coach Kevin Stefanski has with the Browns is impressive. It's not a case where, in today's day and age, you see, like, let's say Zach Taylor with the Bengals. Can't help himself, wants to throw it all over the place. Right? When you have a really good running back in Joe Mixon before he got hurt. For the Browns, they just keep pounding the football. Part of that has been weather, but there's the discipline. There's the belief. You got a dominant offensive line. So, yeah, both guys can catch out of the backfield. Both guys can plow through the line. You can swing them out. You can line them up in different ways. You can have both on the field, one on the field. There's just so many different possibilities to use them. And that's why both are playable in fantasy football.
Okay, great stuff. Thank you so much, Andy. We always appreciate your insight and perspective. You stay safe, okay?
Oh, you too. And happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Thank you. Blessings. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, wishing all of you a very happy and blessed Thanksgiving holiday and weekend. Welcome back on this Saturday morning to Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. As always, thank you for allowing us to be a part of your weekend. We are always, we're ready to talk some PGA news and notes and ready to open up our phone line and welcome back in. And that is former PGA pro Larry Miller. Happy Thanksgiving. How's the weekend going for you, Larry?
Great, great. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Hope everybody had a safe Thanksgiving and get on the golf course. It's the safest place you can be.
Well, I tell you what, one thing I am thankful for here in 2020 as this pandemic drags on is the gift that just keeps on giving, and that is the game of golf. I mean, how could we have ever muscled through all of this? I mean, golf is, it's actually done quite well in 2020.
It made it a lot easier, a lot more enjoyable, and also keeps you healthy. You're getting exercise. You're out in the fresh air, away from indoor crowded, you know, any places that have a bunch of people. And, you know, like I said, it's the safest place you can be. And at the same time, it offers a lot of enjoyment and exercise. If you can just ignore the frustrations of bad shots, you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Hey, if you're just joining us at Sports Map Radio Network, our special guest is former PGA pro Larry Miller. And we want to take time and recap Robert Straub's big win at the RSM Classic as he holds off Kevin Kisner to win in a playoff. This is just the guy that you predicted would win, right?
Well, yeah. Well, you know, it's his second win.
I know.
and he even said himself that he was really gratified to get that second win because, you know, You can back into one and win one in your career. And if you only win one, you know, it's not the same. But when you have multiple wins, you know, even two, it shows that the ability is there and that it wasn't just a one hit wonder, you know. So I think he got a lot of gratification and confirmed, you know, what a player he is by winning that second event. And the way he did it, wow, it was exciting.
Well, yeah, that was one of my biggest takeaways is when he was, nearly holing a pitching wedge from 159 yards out on the second playoff hole and tapped it in for a birdie for the win. I mean, he nailed it. He went right at it, and what a clutch shot that was.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When you get into that situation where you're in contention, you come down to the end, and you got a chance to win it, and you sort of get into this hyper focus where you're just locked into the target, and you might be nervous, you might be jittery, the pressure's on, you know, everything gets tight. But at some point, your mind comes around and just says, you know, I'm just going to go for it because everything else has been exhausted. You almost put the white flag up to pressure, you know, and you say, I surrender, and then it frees you up to be aggressive, and you see that a lot. Sean McKeel, when he won that PGA, when he hit that 5-iron within inches of the cup, and Tiger's done it a couple of times, one time in the dark, I think at Bay Hill or in the PGA. And, you know, you see that a lot where at the very end, a player gets into this hyper-focus. You can call it the zone, whatever you want to call it, and you get locked into your target, and you just go for it. You just said, you know what, Katie, bar the door, I'm going for it. And that's what he did, and he nailed it. But, you know, a pitching wedge from 159, my pitching wedge doesn't go that far. I don't know what these guys are eating, you know, what vitamins they're taking, but that's the distances are getting to be pretty amazing.
That is amazing. So take us through as far as what is your mindset on an approach shot? I mean, sometimes do we as golfers overthink it and we do need to just go right at it? Or do you need to be going through that checklist and the wind and, you know, where you need to attack it at?
Well, I'll tell you what Jack Nicklaus said one time about approach shots. First you look at the pin position. Where is the pin?
Right.
You know, is it in the middle of the green? Is it on the left side, the right side? And Nicklaus always, you know, and we've said this many times on the show before, but he won a lot of tournaments with his brain, you know, by just really having tremendous course management. So what he would do if you got a pin on the right, Nicklaus would aim for the center of the green. And if it's on the left, he'd aim for the center of the green. If it's in the middle, then he'd go for it. And the rationale is that if the pin's on the right and you aim for the middle of the green, if you push it a little bit, you're going right at the flag. If you don't push it and you happen to hit it straight, you got a, what, 20-footer, 15, 20-footer for birdie. If you pull it a little bit, you're still on the green with a longer putt. So it's playing the percentages. And so on approach shots, you always, the first thing to consider on an approach shot is where is the flag. And that sort of dictates, you know, where you're going to aim, what kind of shot you're going to hit. And, of course, the yardages have become almost inconsequential because they've got it down now, you know, to the yard or less. They know the exact distances, and they know exactly how far they hit their clubs. And so then it becomes a matter of where you're going to aim the shot and what type of shot you're going to play. But, yeah, but approach shots, that's where you make the money because
you
keep getting putts at birdies from close range, and you're going to shoot a low number.
We are so glad you're with us on this Thanksgiving edition of the Big E Sports Show at Sports Map Radio Network. Many different ways to connect with us. Always live on Twitter, at eRadio Sports, info at eRadioSports.com, podcastarena.com. And we are going one-on-one with our regular guest that joins us each and every week, and that is Larry Miller, who is a life member of the PGA of America and former PGA Tour player. And, of course, you can check out all of his stuff at LarryMillerGolf.com. We are recapping Robert Streb's big win at the RSM Classic as he holds off Kevin Kisner. And, you know, the thing about golf is that, you know, watching that tournament is it's a little bit of a fickle game. It's so crazy. I mean, like, Streb, he hadn't finished in the top 125 in the FedEx Cup standings in the past three seasons, and he had only shot in the 60s three times in his last 12 rounds. And then he had, what, four straight rounds in the 60s. I mean, so how does that happen? How do you all of a sudden get hot?
Well, you get momentum. You know, you have that, he gets that first round where he shoots a good round and got a good feel for the greens with the putter. That's a big thing that creates momentum, is when you can get the speed of the greens really dialed in. You know, a lot of weeks, a player just never gets it, you know, never gets quite synced up with the speed of the green. And so it doesn't make a lot of putts. But when you get greens that you just really have the speed nailed, and so you can be aggressive, more aggressive with your putts because you got the speed down. And so I think that's what happened. He got on a roll in that first round and got some momentum and said, boy, you know, I'm stroking it good. I love the speed of these greens. And then he shoots another good round, and then the rest is history. I mean, then you got so much momentum, it just carries over. It's a game of momentum, and, you know, just like most sports,
mm-hmm.
all sports are like that. You know, you get a basketball player, you know, that gets on a hot streak shooting three-pointers, and you keep feeding him the ball, and he keeps making them, and it just sort of builds on itself. And it can go the other way, too. You know, in golf especially, it can go downhill real quick. If you get some negative momentum, then it gets in your head, and it starts affecting your mechanical performance. But anyway, it is a game. It's a fickle game. And you know, everybody would have bet the house on Kisner coming down the stretch, because here you've got a seasoned veteran, great competitor, and a guy that, you know, won one time, and like you said, you know, three rounds in the 60s, and you would have had to, you know, put all the money on Kisner coming down the end there. But Streb just had the momentum and carried it right on through.
You know, you were talking about negative momentum. How do you pivot? How do you transition out of that and get back in sync?
You have to do something totally different and drastic to get out of it. You can't keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect to get out of it. If you're, you know, if you've got a problem slicing the ball, you got to get out on that range and work on first of all, trying to hook it. Do the opposite. You always try to do the opposite in golf to correct a problem, a flaw. And Bob Toski, who was a, you know, famous teacher and player years ago on the tour, he coached my roommate on the tour, Bob Lewis. He was his swing coach, and he would always work opposites. You know, if Bob was overcutting the ball or overdrawing it, he'd have him hit the opposite shot on the range, you know, a few hundred times. And what that does, you work the extremes toward the middle. And so, you know, if you're hooking it too much or slicing it too much, you work on hitting the opposite shot. And what happens is you start gradually moving into the center where you're hitting it straight. And so that's a good way to get out of a slump, is to do something totally different, do the opposite. Can't keep doing the same thing because you're going to replicate it and you're going to have that negative momentum continue.
As we recap the RSM Classic, I want to ask, I mean, have you ever played at Sea Island? Have you played that course before, Larry?
I have. I have played there. They have more, you know, multiple courses, but it can often get pretty windy there,
right.
Which can create problems. But other than that, if the wind is lying down, the courses are not difficult. They're not very penal off the tee. You got some room off the tee boxes and with your drives, and it's not exceedingly long. But I'll tell you, the wind though there, it can really blow there near the water, and when it does, it creates a lot of problems. The approach shots there are the key to those golf courses. The fairways are pretty generous, but you have to hit good iron shots, and then that's what Strub did. You know, he kept hitting good approach shots, good iron shots, and that's the key there to play. But yeah, the wind is a big factor there.
Here it is Saturday morning. We certainly were treated the day after Thanksgiving to the ultimate golf matchup. You're talking about the match. It's always better when Tiger Woods participates, and hopefully next year he'll be a part of the annual Black Friday event. What do you like about just fun events like this and seeing these celebrities play, like Charles Barkley?
Nothing.
Okay.
You know, we've talked about this before, about these matches, and I'm kind of half kidding, but,
yeah.
You know, they're entertainment. You know, it's you get to see some of these sports celebrities and stars play golf, and some of them, you know, the average golfer loves it because he watches these guys make a fool of themselves on the golf course just like they do, and so they get to see that. But they get to see these big names, you know, playing golf, but it's, you know, it's not serious golf, and you know, it. You know how I am. I like serious golf.
You do. That's true.
these matches are fun entertainment and all that. But let's face it. I mean, Mickelson could beat their best ball. You know,
yeah.
If it was serious golf, it wouldn't be any match at all. I mean, Nick Mickelson. You know, I mean, he was a guy playing with three amateurs who. Well, Charles Barkley. Then that's an interesting story there. I gave him a few golf lessons back
really?
In Birmingham when
okay.
I was
Tell
living
us
there
more.
In at Greystone Country Club, and he's real a character. He's really a nice guy. I liked him, his personality a lot. He likes everybody. He's friendly to everybody, and that golf swing of his, a lot of it is put on. You know, when I was giving him a couple of lessons, he didn't swing that way. He had a fairly decent golf swing. He does that for notoriety, and. It's a lot of fun, though, because he gets a lot of laughs out of it, you know. And but anyway, yeah, these things, you know, it's strictly entertainment and it's fun. But I'd rather watch a golf tournament.
So what were some of the things that Charles Barkley, you know, asked you about as far as with the golf swing? And what were some of those things that you guys did work on? I'm actually very curious.
Well, I just tried to get him to stay on plane all the time instead of looping the club around. You
yep.
know, I told him, I said, you got more loops in the roller coaster at Six Flags than your swing, you know. I mean, this guy's got it all over the place, but then he would settle down, you know, and he'd swing halfway decent. But I tried to get him to take the club back and stop at the top and then swing straight down from where he was without looping it around, trying to get him to stay on plane the whole time. And when he does that, he hits the ball pretty well. You know, I'm sure you've met him or interviewed him or whatever, but the guy's a giant. I mean, he's a huge guy.
He's a big man.
And, the first day I met him, you know, when I shook his hand, it was like a statue. He was so solid. I mean, the guy's like a rock.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, he referred to me as the little pro, you know, that's because he was towering over me, you know.
Uh-huh.
But it was fun working with him, though. And he's a fun guy and a really nice guy.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with former PGA pro Larry Miller after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 1, SportsMap Radio Network, our Thanksgiving edition of the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's go back inside the ropes with former PGA pro Larry Miller. We are quickly running out of time, but I got to ask you, we got to get serious now. We were talking about Charles Barkley, but let's get serious and narrow our focus. 2021 is just around the corner. Talk to me about Ricky Fowler. I mean, is he going to win a major? Where do you see his game right now, Larry?
Well, you know, it's kind of like McIlroy trying to win the Grand Slam at the Masters. He keeps pressing. I think Ricky needs to stop pressing and making it so hard on himself and trying too hard. And just, he's a great player. You've got to believe that his time's going to come with a major. If he can just get himself in contention after three rounds, you know, I think he can win one. He's got the game for it. He's a great putter. But I think you can just start trying too hard. And I think that's what Rory's doing with the Masters. You know, he wants that career Grand Slam, and he has to win the Masters. And every time he goes there, he presses and he tries too hard. And then when you do that in golf, when you try too hard, it doesn't work. You know, you get out of rhythm and you don't play well. So you have to be, you know, you have to, it's a fine line. You have to be aware of your swing and make sure you've got everything dialed in. But at the same time, you have to have some freedom in the way you play. Without the freedom, the tension sets in and then it destroys the mechanics. So you got to try to somehow get out there and get the mindset that you're going to play with some freedom and just let it go and let your talent do the trick and don't try to force it.
I think it was Matthew Wolf that said you have to care, but you can't care too much.
Right, right. Well, Brad Faxon famously said, you know, he's one of the greatest putters ever. He said he didn't get to become a great putter until he just didn't give a damn whether he made it or
mm-hmm.
not. He said that.
Yeah.
He said that in Bob Rotella's book. And he said once he could adopt that attitude of just get up there, look at the line and stroke it without, you know, without worrying about it so much, he became a great putter. And what does that say? It says that he all of a sudden started getting some freedom with his putting stroke.
Former PGA Pro joins us each and every week at Sports Map Radio Network. That is Larry Miller. Always so thankful for him and his beautiful wife, Connie, for all that you mean to our family. Thank you so much, Larry. You guys have a great rest of your weekend. We look forward to another conversation next week.